This is Henry Chamberlain. I'm speaking with Stephen Charles Jaffe. He's done a lot of fun movies over the years, executive producer on Ghost. He's also produced Near Dark, The Fly 2, Star Trek 6, The Undiscovered Country, one of my personal favorites, Time After Time. And recently on his plate has been this amazing documentary on the legendary cartoonist Gahan Wilson. The documentary is called Born Dead, Still Weird, and it actually is doing really well on Kickstarter right now, and we're going to be talking about that. He also won Best Documentary at Comic-Con a few years back. I wanted to just jump right in, Stephen, and have you talk about your adventure with Born Dead, Still Weird.
Well, I suppose the genesis of it all began when I was around 10 years old, and I saw my first Gahan Wilson cartoon in the gray light of the early 60s, with all kinds of paranoia still lingering from McCarthy era and the Cold War, and you know, just seeing this incredible, crazy, vibrant imagery in his cartoon. I will admit, nestled among my first images of a Playboy Playmate,
oh, of course,
was quite timid in those days. but nevertheless, it was quite a day, and I've never forgotten it, because as I was flipping through the pages of this Playboy that was on unofficial loan from my best friend's father's library, suddenly flames erupted around me, literally on the ground, and I don't know exactly how this fire started, if my friend had anything to do with it, but I'm discovering Gahan, discovering Playmates, and all of a sudden fire and brimstone are erupting around me. So I've never quite forgotten that day, and years later, when I became a producer and a professional filmmaker, I kept thinking about Gahan's work and thinking, God, how could I get this fantastic talent up on the big screen?
Yeah.
And eventually I met Gahan, and we struck up this lovely friendship that has continued for over 23 years, and we went through the proverbial development hell on a number of things trying to get them made, and are still actually working on it. There's an illustrated book of his that I absolutely love called Eddie Decco's Last Caper, and Nicholas Meyer, who wrote Star Trek 2, 4, 6, and he and I did The Day After and Star Trek and a few other movies together. Nick was also a big fan of Gahan. So anyway, long story made short, we pitched Eddie Decco to IMAX, who at the time was maybe going to get into the original content business in 3D animation. And anyway, we wrote a script of Eddie Decco for them, and we're still trying to get this made and fulfill this enormous dream of having Gahan's work up on the biggest screens possible, including IMAX. But anyway,
cool.
I think I'm getting off course from your question, but it was really...
I'm glad you did.
Well, it had to begin some way, somehow.
Yeah.
Anyway, through all the years of trying to... hang on one second. Sorry, I'm going to silence this barking dog for a minute, or... Put the silencer on. I'm not going to silence the dog. I'm all for dogs. In the process of explaining who Gahan is and his work to studio executives, I realized that I had to do more than, you know, take my word for it. You know, if you entrust us to making a Gayne Wilson animated feature film, it's going to be great and everybody's going to love him. And eventually I realized I had to make a documentary about Gayne, not just to do justice to Gayne. I had seen the film about R. Crumb, which, you know, was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, R. Crumb and Gayne are from two totally different worlds, but being prejudiced in favor of Gayne, I thought, well, gosh, you know, if Crumb can have a documentary, Gayne's got to have one. And so I'm looking around in a room like, who's going to climb that ladder and blow up the machine gun nest that's up there? The only one standing there was me. So I thought, well, you know, what the hell? I started off in documentaries, this would be a fun thing. And I thought, oh, it'll take, you know, 3 months, maybe 6 months tops. And then when I started interviewing Gayne, and I, you know, I realized there was this enormous responsibility I had to not only do justice to Gayne's life and art, but to make a great film. And, you know, suddenly, you know, that line from Apocalypse Now when Martin Sheen says, you know, I became the caretaker of Walter E. Kurtz's memory or something like that. Anyway, so I was on a mission, just as Martin Sheen's character was in Apocalypse, to get the best Gayne Wilson movie ever made. You know, so it didn't take 3 months or 6 months. It ultimately took 6 years non-consecutively, but I was very good friends with the late, great documentarian Les Blank, and I remember a couple of years ago he made this wonderful film called All in This Tea, and after seeing the film, I said to Les, well, you know, how long did it take you to make this? And he said, well, it took me 10 years to figure out I was making the wrong movie. And I thought, oh my God, I've gotten off cheap with 6 years. But any event, the highlight truly was the screening at Comic-Con and winning Best Documentary. I mean, you know, you've probably been to the con, and you know, it's not a very sentimental place, right?
It's rather pretty boisterous.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, for me to start crying in front of this audience after winning the award was slightly absurd, but, you know, I figured, well, you know, this is Gayne's fan base, so if I'm going to get emotional about anywhere, I guess this is as good a place as any.
Yeah.
So, but it really, it you know, kind of made me feel, I mean, every time we screen this movie, so many people from all walks of life and different ages, you know, respond favorably to it. And, you know, I knew the movie played well to an audience. My task at hand, and still is to get it out to a real, you know, paying audience that appreciates what this man has been doing for over 50 years. And, you know, one of the interesting responses I had to the film, I sent a copy to Robert Redford, and I'm the only one who wouldn't send Robert Redford a copy to get into Sundance. I just sent it to him because I think I had heard he was a fan from his New Yorker cartoon. So, anyway, I sent it to him, and I got a note back. And this is what Redford got out of it more than anything. And I thought it was so great because I didn't set out to do an inspirational film. I mean, once I started asking Gayne questions and people around him, I realized this was going to be an adventure. This was going to take me down different paths that, you know, that's kind of the exciting part about making a documentary. There isn't a fixed script, or at least there wasn't on this.
Yeah.
You never know, you know, what dark corner you're going to go into, and when you shine a light on something, what's going to happen. But anyway, just to complete this thought about Robert Redford, so, you know, he thanked me for the DVD on Gay and said, I'm a huge proponent of art, not only getting more into the educational system, but also because it can save some lives as it enhances others. It's a fine piece of work, and I thank you sincerely, Robert Redford.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, there's scenes in the documentary about Gahan's childhood when, you know, he's very candid about growing up with two out of control alcoholic parents, and clearly Gahan was drawing monsters before he could read or write, sort of pre-literate, as a defense mechanism for dealing with his, you know, his parents who had this huge drinking problem. And, you know, so art really saved Gahan Wilson's life. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that really blew my mind. And, I mean, overall, the most shocking and gratifying discovery I had making this film was how much personal life of Gahan Wilson's is in every one of his cartoons. I mean, even the most outrageous, you know, that's why when someone sees the film, you'll see that I've divided it thematically with the themes in his cartoons. I mean, you know, the most fun theme of his cartoons is, you know, gaiety in the face of disaster or doom, you know, like mm-hmm. generals with a mushroom cloud going off behind them, just, you know, kind of like something out of Strangelove, thinking, oh, you know, it's a few million people, you know, what's the difference if they're gone, you know, we'll always have a place for generals like you. Crazy stuff. But, you know, that's also a big part of the appeal to me, and I guess to other people, about Gahan is, you know, he is a total nonconformist and always has been. And, you know, when I think about what goes on in school today with bullying and bullying getting carried out to life and death extremes, I think that, you know, Gahan was kind of a antidote for me about bullying. I mean, I unfortunately where I was growing up in Connecticut experienced something that was kind of like a combination of West Side Story and The Warriors, all taking place in the boys' room with knife fights and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's another reason why I can say in retrospect, Gahan appealed to me. There was a kind of unofficial kinship with this smart, brilliant, and, you know, totally off the wall artist. And you know, so here I am, many years later, still being one of the most avid fans of Gahan Wilson's, and hoping that this Kickstarter project will actually enable us to enter the film as an Academy Award in the best documentary category, you know, as a contender for it. And I know any aspect of the Academy Awards is highly competitive. Some would say ruthless, because there's a lot of money spent on campaigns. And, you know, I think it's an extreme long shot that we'll get nominated. But, you know, all I can say is I put my heart and soul into this. And this is about a man who's a national treasure, in my opinion, and has so much to offer so many people of different walks of life. Who knows? I mean, you know, a lot of the documentaries that get the attention of, you know, headlines and Hollywood social media are documentaries that came off today's headlines, you know, Wikipedia,
sure,
stuff like that. And then, you know, there's no reason not to do that. But Gan is somebody who's been here for so long, and I just feel, you know, he's an American master. I mean, I would love to have this on American Masters, you know. But, you know, Gan is different, and I think people just have to see the film to hear and see his story, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've even had recovering alcoholics come up to me after the film and say, thank you so much for sharing Gan's story and his struggle with alcohol. It really made me feel more secure in my efforts to deal with my problems. And, you know, as I said, I didn't set out to make an inspirational story, but there's so many people that get inspired from hearing, you know, what Gan has done in his life journey. And you know, he's still once a month making a cartoon for Playboy, and almost every week one for The New Yorker. And how many artists can we say, you know, consistently for over 50 years keep turning in this amazing work week after week or month after month? I mean, it's kind of remarkable. Anyway,
it brings to mind so many things. I think you guys have a shot at a nomination. A win, well, we can only hope, but a nomination, that is a possibility. Even if you didn't get nominated, all the buzz that would be created to lift this movie into the sights of the masses of people we wanted to reach. Yeah. I remember Crumb when it came out, and it was a blast of fresh air, because this was a very secretive, very mysterious underground cartoonist with roots going back to the 60s. Like, no one really knew that much about it. No one felt they knew, or maybe literally didn't know that much about Crumb. And then this movie comes out, and they're on the screen talking about his life and lifting the veil, not revealing everything, but a lot that we didn't know about.
The personal story, as you're saying, was the most revelatory, interesting thing about the movie. I mean, of course his art is fun and you know, it has its place in history, but again, it's that, you know, opening up your personal life, you know, making yourself a bit vulnerable to talk to millions of people watching a movie about something nobody's ever heard about before. And, you know, it did grab you. It really, so, I mean, hopefully I come, I mean, Terry's a brilliant director, and he did a great job, and, you know, I don't put myself anywhere near his category of filmmaker, but I tried.
I wanted to ask you about It Was a Dark and Silly Night. Now, that came out in 2008, your documentary was already starting up before that.
Well, that actually was a bit of serendipity. I happened to be... I guess I was interviewing Neil Gaiman, and when we weren't rolling the camera, I was asking him how many times had he collaborated with Gan, because I realized he had illustrated some things for Neil in the past, and Neil told me that he'd just written this children's piece for Art Spiegelman and Francois Mouly, who have this wonderful series of books, Little Lit, and it was called It Was a Dark and Silly Night, and he'd written it specifically for Gan Wilson to illustrate. And I thought, oh my God, well, what? I gotta get a hold of this. And Neil said, well, just remember, it's Gan Wilson for 10-year-olds. It's not the other thing. I mean, it's a sweet thing. I love the idea that these kids have nowhere to hold a party, so they decide to hold it in the graveyard. And that's the fun part when you know, the corpses come out and dance and sing with them. And, you know, it was a way for me to get my hands dirty in the animation world, because I know someday or other I'm going to make this Eddie Deco as a big 3D animated film, and hopefully sooner than later.
Yes.
But So I asked Neil and Gan and Francois and Art permission to do an animated version of this, and you know, we were lucky enough to work with a company out of New Zealand who loved Gan Wilson, and you know, they wanted to offer their services. So I got to do my first animated short with them, and you know, the honor of having it have been written by Neil Gaiman and drawn and designed by Gan Wilson was like, you know, birthday present, you know, times 10. And it was originally, I was going to put it in the movie, and then I don't know what the circumstances, how it all happened, but we just thought, well, you know, maybe this will be an extra in the DVDs, or you know, we'll just send it around as a short ahead of the documentary. You know, mm-hmm. I just didn't quite know what I was going to do with it, but I was happy with it, and the fact that Neil and Gan and Art and Francois really loved this. You know, again, it was a great honor to have them let me do this, and then that they actually liked it, you know. So,
yeah.
That's my Dark and Silly Night story.
Well, there's a scene in the documentary, Born Dead, Still Weird, that takes place at the New Yorker offices, and for anyone who's had the privilege to go there, it's still like out of Mad Men. It's like somewhere in the mid-60s or, I don't know, maybe even the 50s. It's a very small, cramped environment, and there's this little tiny green room, and all the cartoonists pile in there, and they're these little couches and all these filing cabinets. It's not glamorous at all. And
it certainly isn't.
No. And you have all the regulars plus some newbies and wannabes, or aspiring cartoonists, I should say. I went there, and this is the only reason I'm having this interview with you, Stephen. It's all about me. I want to know if I'm in the documentary, because I was there. And I was there right in front of Gavin Wilson, and I got to talk to Bob Mankoff. And I had my 5 minutes with him, and he tore me to shreds, jokingly. And it was a wonderful experience. I really loved it. I cherish it to this day.
If he tore you to shreds, you're probably in it. I'm going to have to do a comparative analysis with you. But you know, I didn't know. I mean, the good news for me was I was so unprepared for what was going to happen. The only thing I knew was I had to have two cameras there, because if any, you know, priceless human drama occurred, I would, you know, cover my rear end, technically speaking. But I had no idea what to expect. I mean, to me, yeah, it was a little bit like Mad Men, but it was also a little bit like Willie Loman. I mean, you know, when you say that, you know, the legends, the greats, the Sam Grosses, the, you know, Cynthia Ross Chastner, but there were other female cartoonists, but, you know, legends are there, but they're standing there waiting among people who, you know, could have walked in off the street. I mean, I could go in there on a Tuesday and, I mean, I'd get my head served back to me on a platter, because I can't throw out to save my life, but I thought this was the craziest thing. But Gan said, you know, he was great, you know, once he got into the whole spirit of, you know, I was making this movie, there was no turning me around on it. And you know, Gan's a very humble guy. The idea at first of a film about him, he was horrified, you know, and it took me many, many years of, you know, getting him to warm up to this idea. And I guess he sort of figured, well, better you, Stephen Jaffe, than somebody else. You know, so Gan, you know, said, do you think you might be able to come by the New Yorker office on this particular Tuesday? The cartoon editor, Bob Mankoff, has never opened up the Tuesday thing for cameras before, and he would like to see if you want to come in and immortalize it. And I said, sure. But, you know, a smart person would have been thinking, well, what's going to happen to Gann when he gets in there? Of course, I was just so nervous about being ready to film all these people that it totally slipped my mind that, you know, what was going to happen when Gann came in. I'll respect spoiler alert protocol and not say what did happen, but it surprised the hell out of me and made the documentary a lot more interesting than if it had gone another way.
There you go.
But you know, that's going to be, if it isn't already, I know a lot of people fax in their cartoons instead of showing up these days, and the Tuesday lunches that followed that, I'm so embarrassed, I can't remember the name of the restaurant, the French name that they would go to every Tuesday afternoon to lick their wounds or share war stories. But anyway, that I think is a thing of the past, but we got it on film, and you know, I tried to get as many aspects of not just Gann's life and his art, but what it's like to, you know, make a living as a cartoonist. And it's incredibly hard. And, you know, they don't have, certainly when I was filming this, they didn't have unions to look after them. And, you know, I know what it's like as a producer when actors come in and they get rejected for a role after an audition, how, you know, that hurts. But this is even tougher. I mean, this, you know, you pitch Bob Mankoff, you know, 5 or 10 cartoons and he shoots them all down, then shreds you. It's like, whoa, you know, now what do I do? I can't sell, there aren't many outlets to sell cartoons to anymore. Maybe online there are, but, you know, they're used to, every time a periodical dies, like Newsweek is the one that comes to mind recently, you know, they had one page of political cartoons, but mm-hmm. now that doesn't exist. So, you know, I gained tremendous respect for cartoonists beyond what I'd already had on kind of a superficial level. But, you know, just to do this week after week and, you know, make, you know, 1 or 2 sales, or, I mean, it's, wow. I have so much admiration, respect for these men and women that do it. It's, you know, it's a whole other world.
Well, for those lucky few who managed to get that regular gig going, God bless them. Other cartoonists, they morph into other things. Or the thing is with Gahan, and I think he's a nice example, a perfect example of an exemplary artist writer, because he's multi talented. I mean, he's as prolific a writer as a cartoonist.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, his short stories are great. And in fact, his use of words is as visually evocative and twisted and hilarious as his cartoons are. I mean, I sent him the other day that, you know, I didn't even deal with his writing in this documentary. I'd need another 2 hours for that, mm-hmm. you know, or another movie entirely.
Well, the little snippets I've seen, it looks like he holds his own very well, and he's fun to watch on the screen.
Yeah, no, Gant's amazing, and you know, even there's a scene at the end when he's dancing away to Randy Newman's wonderful song "I'm Different," and you know, you see he's headed towards this road sign with arrows very, very obviously pointing. The traffic should go one way. Of course, Gann gets to that sign without any prompting from me, and of course he makes the unpopular choice and goes the other way. But you know, I certainly appreciate your interest in Gann and the film, and you know, it's gratifying and flattering to have people him, it's like, yeah, I've been trying to tell the world this for a long time, but, you know, I'm finally getting it.
Well, I have a feeling that this will be a transcendent experience in the same spirit as Crom, where people will be inspired on different levels.
I certainly hope so. We'll see.
And I'm curious, when do you think the DVD will launch? Are you planning that in a strategic manner, or is it just going to happen when it happens?
I'm planning a couple of different ways of building a digital platform, and you know, the fact that if we do succeed here with our Kickstarter project, we get the movie in a theater in LA and a theater in New York in October for 1 week to qualify for Oscar consideration. You know, my hope is that, you know, perhaps a distributor of documentaries, Magnolia, or you know, one of the companies that's been doing them theatrically,
yeah,
feels it's worth picking up. Hey, that would be great. I'd love to have it in theaters beyond just the Academy consideration screenings. But we're planning, you know, a whole digital platform release that would include DVDs. I mean, I still like to own a DVD of any movie that I really, really adore. So,
yeah.
And I think there's a few other people like that still. But, you know, we'll definitely set up a streaming way of doing it, and any kind of new video-on-demand delivery that... I mean, it's so funny, you know, we're in this undeclared revolution, and in the movie business, it's not just technology improving every single day, it's also this whole notion of how a film gets distributed, and what used to be referred to as self-distribution in a pejorative fashion is now, you know, thanks to Netflix and iTunes, become quite a legitimate, respectable way to release a film. And, you know, as a filmmaker, anytime you know, take more control of how your film is getting released or advertised, it's better for you. I think that answers your question. We'll see what happens after the Kickstarter project, and,
which is the main thing right now. I just wanted
to. That's the main thing, and
wanted
you know,
to end on that. Yeah.
I'm just, you know, trying to drum up as much interest and support as possible, and I think we have like till August 17th or 14th. I should know it on my sleeve.
Yeah, a little over 30 days.
Something like that. So, you know, it's going to be a bit of a roller coaster ride, but I get surprised more and more by total strangers' interest in this, and you know, we'll see. But
I just wanted to wrap up by saying that I was in my own Kickstarter successfully funded, and I know the roller coaster effect that you have those days when you're wondering what's going to happen next, and oh, another blip, and you have quite a nice, impressive network of friends and supporters, that people in the movie, and I'm sure they will rise to the occasion, like Mr. Neil Gaiman, of course.
I'm definitely going to reach out to Stan Lee and Stephen Colbert and a few other people who've been so generous with their time and are, you know, so enthusiastic about this. But, you know, this is the time, this is the year for Gann Wilson. That's what's on my agenda.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for your time, Stephen.
My pleasure.